On this episode, we discuss Burnt.
Which is how you're going to feel after you watch the movie.
Oh, brother.
Well done.
Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Welcome to the Flopcast Podhouse. I'm Stuart Wellington.
Flop come well boho. I'm Elliot Kalin.
That was just gibberish.
Three of us doing a thing called a podcast.
Mm-hmm, and we heightened the bit each time. Mm-hmm. Dan, what does this podcast do, or what is a podcast?
Well, a podcast, there's a thing called Really Simple Syndication, or RSS.
You already lost me.
All right. Well, anyway, this is a podcast.
Is it related to simple syrup?
Yeah, it's
too many tongue twisters.
Really Simple Syndication is a syndication made up of equal parts sugar and water.
Interesting. We call it sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
Also the name of my ranch.
Dressing?
Yeah, my ranch dressing. Sugar water brand ranch dressing.
He still gets to wear a cowboy hat, even though it's just a dressing.
I've tried to tell you that your salads are not healthy when you put that stuff on it, Elliot.
It's covered in sugar, just like a salad should be. We call it candy salad.
This is a podcast where we watch a bad movie, and then we talk about it.
Candy corn would be in that salad.
You know it. Candy corn, candy lettuce, candy radishes, candy garbanzos.
Those aren't existing things, though.
Candy cucumbers. Dan, what I'm doing is I'm taking candy and I'm sponge sugar and I'm putting it into a salad form, kind of tricking your eye and your tongue the way a chef would do.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing that?
Molecular gastronomy.
Exactly. Why am I indulging in this cuisinart, if you will?
I won't.
Because I'm an asshole, much like the lead character of our film, Burnt.
Yeah.
You said our film. We didn't make it.
No, we didn't. In fact, I don't want any ownership stake.
Can you prove you didn't make it, Stuart?
Or should I say director John Wells?
There was a period of time where I blacked out and I don't remember very much.
All I remember is
I'm covered in blood and receipts for making the movie Burnt.
I have a vague memory of telling Bradley Cooper to kiss the Nazi soldier from Inglourious Basterds. My God, I made Burnt.
That's the main thing a director does. He just tells them to do a thing that's in the script.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah, I guess.
What part of directing is not that?
It just seems like the script is really the driving force behind that scene rather than the director.
You think that because you're a writer, but you're so naive. Mm-hmm. The script is but toilet paper for the director and the actors to wipe their butts with as they make up a new story called Burnt. Rated R. For use of the word fuck twice.
So we watch this movie tonight.
So this was a Bradley Cooper vehicle. How many Bradley Cooper films have we seen on this show now?
We saw the one about where he didn't have any limits.
Mm-hmm, Valentine's Day.
The one where he took a pill.
The one where he bid hello and goodbye to Hawaii in Aloha.
Limitless.
Shit. I forgot about Aloha.
Yeah, me too. It's a great word. It means two things.
So
Aloha.
We just did
Valentine's Day. Limitless.
That was like four episodes ago. How did I forget?
Yeah, you had a pretty severe blow on the head from that pineapple afterwards, though.
Yeah. Why did I take a nap under that pineapple tree?
I told you it was a bad idea.
But I wanted an upside down cake.
And part of the recipe was have a guy sleep under it. What magic cookbook is this?
That reminds me of a cookbook that was sent in by a listener, and I don't have the person's name. I will thank them next episode. But a listener sent me a Colonial Williamsburg cookbook, and I'm very charmed by these old cookbooks where they have things like turtle soup. If you're making turtle soup in the summer, kill the turtle at dawn. In the winter, kill the turtle at night. And I just love these old recipes.
Only find a turtle that has crawled across a crossroads where a burglar was hung.
That's right.
I mean, turtle soup is delicious.
And their flesh tastes way better depending on when you kill it.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
Like humans.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, Dan.
You got to get them when they're young.
So we watched this movie, Burnt, with our
only
boy.
Kids.
With our boy, Brad Coops.
Yeah, yeah.
A guy who, I mean, he has been in a lot of movies
we've
watched.
To put it in shorthand, we were hanging with Mr. Cooper.
That's right.
As is our wont to do. Now, this movie, let's just say this. Like the other Bradley Cooper movies we've seen in the show, except for Limitless, there was no fantastical element. There was no horror or science fiction or action theme to it. It was just the story of one chef trying to claw his way back to the top by being a total douche to everybody.
Yeah, and apparently his problem was, in the past, he was a douche. And the only way he can fix this is by being a different kind of douche.
Yeah.
A literal douche.
What?
He opens up his vagina cleaning place.
He opens up a vagina cleaning place.
What if that was a Three Stooges short? Like, instead of being plumbers, they were professional tutors. That dowager would have a lot more to complain about.
I'm just imagining like a strip mall that just has like a sign that says the vagina cleaning spot.
Yep.
Yeah. Honey, I'm going to step into Lens Crafters if you want to go into the vagina cleaning spot.
I'm going to go into Beyond Vape. You can go into Beyond there.
Vape. I'm going to go stop into Bed Bath and Beyond Clean Vagina. Because that's what you get.
In the bath.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the movie. So we open. Bradley Cooper is living in Nolens.
Uh-huh.
And he's a fry cook somewhere.
He's shucking oysters away.
He's shucking oysters, and he counts in a little book all the oysters that he shucks.
Now, somewhere, Nicolas Cage is dealing with some stolen money.
He was stolen gold, and his daughter was kidnapped.
My mistake. But I thought he burned the money.
He did burn the money.
He burnt the money early in the flashback.
Which forces him to steal the gold.
Yeah.
Which is to
to get the girl.
Yeah.
To catch the kid.
To save the kingdom. Who swallowed
the mouse.
Who swallowed a fly. I don't know why he swallowed the fly.
I guess he'll die.
Eventually. I mean, we all will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chilling reminder from Elliot.
So he's
it makes every moment that much sweeter. Wait, this moment. Hold on, guys. Don't talk. We just experienced a moment of life in its most basic. Uh-huh. No talking, no thinking, just existing. And we only have a limited number of those.
It's gone now.
And I guess maxfund.org/donate. Is that still a thing that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, sure, they can still do that.
Okay, so Bradley Cooper, he shucks his 1,000,000th oyster, and then abruptly...
He's been keeping a tally.
Keeping a tally. Like
Moleskine.
Was it literally 1,000,000 oysters? He couldn't have shucked
it
a million
oysters.
It was
1,000,000 oysters.
No one can shuck 1,000,000 oysters.
It took him a long time.
Well,
he didn't do it in like one day.
An electric shuckifying machine. Like in Dr. Seuss's unpublished failure, Bartholomew Blinks, Oster Shucking Machine.
That's right.
You would have thought he would have come up with a better
name.
This
is why it was never published.
Dr. Seuss's unpublished Shuck a Fuck of Oysters.
His adult. He briefly went into adult poetry.
That's right.
An oyster I'll shuck, and then she I will fuck, said the man with the aphrodisiac grin.
From Canarka Canuck.
And then there was the man from Gnorgula Hex, who thought about nothing all day but just sex. It's very easy to write dirty Dr. Seuss rhymes.
Yep. You can make up whatever. It's easy. It turns out it's easy to be a poet when you can make up whatever word you want.
when you're not restricted to the actual words in the English language, it opens up a world of possible rhymes. Just kidding. He was a genius. Anyway, so he walks out on his job and then apparently walks from New Orleans to England.
Yep,
where
that's right.
In London, he meets up with a whole cast of characters that he knew in his previous life as a superstar bad boy chef.
A whole cast of actors who are kind of slumming it, I guess, in this movie.
I don't know. I mean, it's not.
I mean, this movie was supposed to be, I think, a big
It's like not a good movie, but I don't even know what that. This is a throwback movie.
Okay.
The one thing I like about it, this is a throwback movie to the era of like movies about people.
It is a throwback to an era of movies about people.
Movies about people where there's no action, there's no like the stakes are relatively low and that it's just a person's life. Yeah. Like the kind of movies that James L. Brooks made so well.
Yeah, that's true.
Like it's a throwback to, I don't think it was, this was supposed to be like a $500 million movie, but it's not very good. Like they're not slumming it, no, but it's not very good.
They thought, I mean, I just meant they thought it was going to be maybe an awards contender. I feel like that's,
oh, maybe.
That's the only reason why these movies get made anymore. Is that they think that they might get awards?
Acting
which is,
awards.
I mean, do you think that's the case, or that's just like our like, are we just being pessimists and assuming that?
I mean, I'm sure that the actors like being in movies where they can play parts like, and don't have to do stunts. And
like
stuff.
As soon as you see a drama for adults, you're like, oh yeah, whatever, just pandering to the.
And then the jokes on them because you win Oscars for getting attacked by a CGI bear.
Mm-hmm. I genuinely feel like that might be true these days, though, with like the economics of movie making. It's either an indie movie. Or it's a blockbuster movie, or it's a movie that's designed to try and get some sort of awards attention, and I'm not upset about that. Like that's why I don't mind that awards exist, because that means that we get movies that are a different kind of movie.
I mean, that's not that different from the way the old studio system worked, where you would have they would make their blockbuster films and their money making films, and then they'd have their prestige pictures that were just meant to make the studio look good and not necessarily make a ton of money. Like they'd pour money into like a Shakespeare adaptation or something.
No, you're right. I'm being guilty of
like
that
Throne
thing
of
that
Blood,
I hate, which is like
I'm not Throne of Blood. It's a Japanese movie. It's a different system.
I'm being guilty of that thing that I hate, which is believing that there was a time that was better than this time.
Oh, in terms of filmmaking, there were many times that were better than this time.
Yeah, all listen to Elliot's fucking recommendations for a change.
Thank you. I mean, the difference is that back during that studio system, the studios churned out so many dozens, if not hundreds, of movies that there was a higher average of movies that were good.
Right.
Whereas now, and there was a lot of crap, but there was more that was good. And all the best talent was locked into slave-like 7-year contracts where they had no control over what they could make. The movies, then you had your later eras where there was more freedom in filmmaking, or even supposedly, but now it's the era where it's just like everything's got to make $1 billion or win an award or not get made.
But winning an award is part of, I'm assuming the purpose of making a movie that wins an award is that it will also help it make money.
It definitely, it's supposed to goose the money that it makes. But there's that belief that like this one doesn't necessarily make money. But if someone's billed as Academy Award winner or Academy Award nominee in this other movie, that'll help that one get attention. Like awards are a marketing thing. For
sure. I guess that makes sense.
But anyway, Burnt didn't win any awards. It was nominated for none. It's not very good. So he comes back to Bradley Cooper comes back to London, where all these people he knew in Paris are now living. He was executive chef?
A hot dog bad boy chef
at a restaurant by a famous chef, older chef named Jean-Luc.
I think you're right.
What was the name of that waiter in Paris? Jean-Luc. I haven't seen that commercial in so long.
Well, it hasn't aired in a long time.
Was that for coffee or tea?
Coffee. I don't think.
You don't watch old commercials on YouTube anymore?
I do all the time, though. Actually, if I had more time, there was a period when there were a bunch of compilations on YouTube. They're just called 80s commercials. And I would watch like 20 minutes worth at a time, just being like, I remember that one. Oh, man, that one. Every now and then a 70s commercial would slip in. And I'd be like, you didn't do your homework, you two.
Lately, I just keep seeing commercials for fucking Time Warner Cable where they basically are saying, hey, you know, you used to be able to make a date with the Time Warner guy and you could do whatever you wanted because it took him forever. Well, now you're not off the hook anymore. Now you have to go to work, lazy slobs. And it's like, fuck you, dude. You were shitty at your jobs. And now you think you're less shitty. Don't put that on me, bro.
Don't make me the bad guy.
That's like the commercial I hated the most recently where they're like, all through February, Subway's footlongs are only $6. It's like, fuck you. Like we don't remember that there were $5 all the time before. Don't try and make this like it's a special deal.
I'm trying to think what commercials nowadays I hate, but I just fast forward through all of them.
Yeah.
Those Zoom Time Zoom ads, do they still do those where the kid goes, Zoom Zoom?
At least Domino's had those. The goddamn fucking balls to admit their pizza was shitty.
I wish
hats
their ads
off
were
to you, Domino's.
Tip of the cap to you guys.
You can pour as much money into anti-abortion causes as you want now, Domino's. I guess that was just the founder of Domino's who does that.
Yep.
It's not like the it's not like when you give the money to the delivery guy who puts it in a tube, which takes it to like someone who blows up abortion clinics.
Someone who's about to commit an abortion, and he gets the money. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry,
never mind.
Maybe if you could pay me a little more."
The Noid is clearly a thinly veiled abortionist stereotype.
Anyway, the we've touched on a lot during this episode, but very little on the movie. He goes
a lot of feelings, a lot of thoughts.
He goes to London, and first he goes to a hotel run by a guy named Tony, played by the Nazi soldier from Inglourious Basterds. Mm-hmm. And Tony is one of many old cohorts that he's going to try to corral into helping him get back to where he was. It turns out he's been sober for 2 years, and now he's ready to go after the third Michelin star because he was a two-star Michelin chef. Mm-hmm. Now, I always
given
thought
out
that
by the Michelin man.
Well, at one point they do go, when the Michelin man comes into the restaurant, it's like, do not promise something the movie will not fulfill, which is that Bibendum will walk into the restaurant with like a trench coat and glasses and a hat like the fucking thing in disguise. Like a mob.
I'm late for my poker game.
I don't even
the
think...
big stogie cigar. Keep throwing around those $5 words, big brain. Anyway, get me some duck confit. I gotta test it for my road guide.
Give me some rubber confit.
Why is he eating what he's made out of?
Why would he eat duck?
Because it's delicious.
Why does a tire eat a duck?
Didn't you ever see that movie Rubber?
Oh, okay.
Who
I got
knows
you.
What that tire's going to do?
That's right. Yeah. Who knows what that wacky tire might do next?
I mean, that was kind of the subtext of the movie.
Yeah, I think that was the line on the poster.
It was called Tires Day Out.
Anyway, look who's tired now.
Feeling tired? Not yet. Watch Rubber.
It will put you to sleep. Says Snoop Dogg in his genre movies review column in Cinescape, I guess. Anyway, so
it's Fangoria column.
What a huge get that Snoop Dogg is writing this column for Fangoria.
Cinescapes.
It's called High Art.
I mean, he did
art.
Do those. Didn't he sponsor those horror movies?
Yeah, he sponsored them.
Yeah.
He told those horror movies.
His name was all over their cars.
He told those horror movies that if they walked a certain number of miles, he would.
Yeah. You put a dollar in a can.
Yeah. But Snoop Dogg had those horror movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't
just like
Tales,
he had Girls Gone Wild.
Was it like Tales from the Dog Pound or something like that? Or Tales from the.
He had his hand in a lot of pies.
Well, there was Bones, the movie he's in.
Maybe I'm thinking of Bones.
And the murder was the case video.
Anyway, so he finds the head of this hotel who is, I don't remember what his relationship was. They all worked at this restaurant that the legendary Jean-Luc, who has since died, is now, was running. And his daughter was going out with Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper skipped out of town after some kind of blow up involving.
He's clearly like a figure of legend.
He's everyone remembers him. Everyone's like, I thought you were dead. I thought you killed yourself by now.
Yeah, he was like a drunk and a heroin addict or whatever.
He slowly throughout the movie, he starts putting on a leather jacket. And then at one scene, he's riding a motorcycle and it's like, okay, so he's just kind of shelf Wolverine. Because Wolverine already has knives that come out of his hands. Just go all the way and make him a chef who has knives that come out of his hands for cutting things. But here's the thing. He's driven by his demons. The reason he did all those drugs and that he seduced the boss's daughter and then broke up with her and ran out of the country is that he's driven to find perfection in food. And whenever he's confronted with the imperfect quality of reality, he can't take it and he collapses. Sounds like an interesting character, right? You'd be wrong. He's very boring. Instead, he smugs.
Not easy to sympathize with.
Not at all. He smugs his way through every scene. Anything he wants, he almost instantly gets. Characters who have every reason to be mad at him just kind of roll over for him, only one of whom is planning an elaborate revenge plot that will unfold later. And so one of them is a guy who his sous chef, Michel, from the restaurant, it's a man's name, it's French. Mm-hmm. It's not Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen.
Reminding me.
I mean, I'm talking to listeners, more even on looking at you, Stuart. He goes, He goes, oh, on the opening night of my restaurant in Paris, you called the health inspector and then released rats in my restaurant. And Bradley Cooper's like, I was a scamp.
Which is crazy.
And Bradley Cooper does a lot of pontificating about food and how important it is. At one point, he tells his chefs, I want people after they eat here to never want to eat again.
Yeah.
Which is...
It seems like a weird goal.
No, you don't lose your repeat business.
Yeah, you want to tear your tongue out because you never want... less good food to cross it in the future.
Just like you're like Sam Neill in Event Horizon, but with your tongue instead of your eye.
Where we're going, we won't need tongues.
What a weird line that would have been.
Where are we going, Sam Neill?
Why are you saying that? Because you're clearly talking with a tongue. It's not like he's speaking in.
Well, I needed telepathy. The tongue to tell you this, and then I was going to take it out. He decides he's going to start his own restaurant. He's in. He's in competition with what's his name from The Americans, who was always the Salieri to his Mozart, which they literally say. And now, because I guess he wasn't a drug addicted fool, he has a big restaurant that looks like heaven because it's all white walls and white plates.
Or a genius bar, one or the other.
Mm, have you ever had a genius bar? It's delicious, and you feel smarter afterwards. The secret, it's full of limitless. The secret ingredient is limitless.
Okay, you got me with the limitless reference. Limitless.
He also...
Limitless.
He meets a lady chef played by...
Sienna Miller.
Sienna Miller, who at first does not want to work for him because he's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But then she has to work for him because he arranges for her to be fired by her boss to go work at his restaurant. And long story short... He's a jerk to everybody. He assembles his team of chefs as if he's putting together a heist for a very boring movie, mm-hmm. which
or
this
like
is.
The movie he references, Seven Samurai.
He says he wants his chefs to be like Seven Samurai, meaning I assume that by the end of the film, all but three will have died.
Mm-hmm.
He references this to Emma Thompson, by the way, who is employed to make sure that he stays off the drugs.
Yeah, she's a therapist, and she gives him drug tests and... Yeah. Picks up a paycheck for probably like 3 days worth
of work. Which I just mentioned to show how overqualified the cast for this movie is.
Laurence Olivier is in this movie.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even appear on camera. You just know he's around.
They just had his bones on set.
Yeah, just like the show Bones, or that Snoop Dogg movie, Bones, starring Laurence Olivier as the Bones. They put the restaurant together.
We learn what a sous vide machine is.
Yeah, he's been so out of the game, he doesn't know what sous vide is.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to know that much about being a chef, for being a, like, superstar chef. Unfortunately, when they're about to open the restaurant, a reporter got a leaked copy of his menu and wrote a bad review of the menu, and so a couple tables don't show up. And the staff of the restaurant is not yet a fully cohesive team. And Bradley Cooper loses his shit. And he starts throwing plates all over the place and getting really mad. Is that when he throws the plates around, or is it later?
Yeah, that's when he throws the plates around.
He's throwing plates around. It's one of a couple different blow-ups that he has, a la the film Blow Up, another better movie than this one.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm going to apologize to everybody who dined here.
And then, give them a full refund, which they don't address exactly how much these people are being charged for their crazy, like sauce splattered plates. But I'm assuming it's a shitload.
Hundreds,
of money.
If not thousands. Uma Thurman's in the movie very briefly as a restaurant critic who he wows and then fails to wow.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything's okay again. The restaurant goes back to business and everything's going fine. They get a good review on their second day. And so everything's good for a little bit until what they think are some Michelin judges come in.
Uh-huh, the Michelin men.
There's an elaborate code where they order half a bottle of wine and two bottles, a glass of tap water.
Different color of bandanas that they wear in their back pockets.
And yellow bandana means you're a Michelin star judge, and red bandana means you're a top.
That spins around.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a whirling dervish.
What did you think I meant? Like a dreidel, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and black means you're a bottom. In Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, congratulations, yeah.
We got the part.
Yeah, William Shakespeare's immortal comedy of love and magic.
Perhaps the most
in the woods of ancient Greece.
Perhaps the most enjoyable part in the play.
Bottom, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't count Puck's speech at the end, then yes.
Now, guys, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when I was but a little baby, my mother was the head of her English department and the theater department, and she was the director for the high school play, which was Midsummer Night's Dream, and I got to be the baby in it.
Oh, that's cool.
Wearing a golden diaper.
Wait, where's the baby? Is soiled. I forget where the baby is.
The baby, know I was
the
one a baby.
The baby's the whole reason that Oberon and Titania are mad at each other. I assume it's that baby.
No, it was the other cooler baby that skateboards across the fucking stage.
It was Baby Herman. Yeah.
It was Baby Huey who shows up.
It was a Lindbergh baby.
Sir William.
That's what happened to him.
You've got to remove the part when enormous retarded duck baby in a diaper waddles across the stage and knocks all the scenery down. But it's like, the heart of the play. That's the other thing. We got to change the name.
Use
it's
that
not,
word.
It's not a Midsummer Night's Huey's Dream. They can say retarded because it's Elizabeth in England. They were very, very offensive back then. Tasteless. Now, he gets really mad because things don't go right with the Michelin men. Mm-hmm. They send their food back. He didn't taste the food that went out. He just asked Michelle if it was good.
He was too busy having suffered a beating at the hands of some drug dealers. One of his many sins of the past.
That's right. The drug dealers want their money back, and they show up every now and then, and this
one
time they beat him
up. It's just $2.
It's like you're better off dead. Yeah,
he will not give it back.
It's the principal, he keeps saying, the principal of the thing. Mm-hmm. That's when Principal Belding shows up. Yeah. Me? No, not you, Dennis Haskins. Get out of here. That's right. He gets beaten up, and so he's kind of like, oh, what? Michelle sends the food out. They send it back. They say it's too spicy. It turns out Michelle put pepper in the food as revenge for the rat trick. Not hat trick, which would have been a great achievement. 3 points? Yeah.
In what sport?
Hokai.
Hokai.
Right? Yokai. Yeah, the Japanese demons.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks out. Uh-oh, this is bad. And Bradley Cooper goes on another bender. He wanders off into the night, gets drunk somewhere, shows up at his rival's restaurant and attempts to kill himself by sous-viding his own head.
Yeah, he sticks his head in a sous-vide bag and just, he just clamps it down,
it's
basically. They're just like wrestling to get this bag off his head.
It's one of many tantrum scenes from Bradley Cooper. And, he does an admirable job of freaking out.
If he had been allowed to kill himself, his head meat would be so tender.
Well, there's a different version of this movie where, I guess the Brian Fuller version of the movie, where he sous vides his own head and his enemy serves it and has a bunch of puns about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the critic eats it and is like, a million Michelin stars.
A million Michelin stars. How ironic. He finally achieved his dream in one form or another.
Mm-hmm. That's the weirdest Crypt Keeper impression I've ever heard.
It was not a Crypt Keeper impression. It was just kind of like an ironic thing.
He was at the head of his profession.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm just staring off into space. You can't, sure. You can't see me on the podcast, but so, I'm committing.
I didn't know I ordered really the head cheese. I'm glad I was sat at the head of the table.
What? I guess the problem was he didn't have his head in the game. Wipe out. That is the song that I have a great video of my son dancing to while I sing it in an annoying way that way. And he refused to let me stop singing it, and I got tired of it before he did. So I guess they say the DNA gets purer with every generation.
I'm almost sure I can imagine exactly how he's dancing to that song.
I think you've seen it. You've seen his pants off kitchen dance, right?
That makes it sound a lot weirder than it was.
Just because my 2-year-old son after dinner will often ask me to take his pants off so he can dance in the kitchen before his bath.
That's the best part is that he requires you to remove those pants.
He gets really mad if I'm not home when he gets home from playing in the afternoon to take his shoes off. And I'm like, what kind of monster have I created? Yeah. But anyway.
Like, I wish that, I guess
I wouldn't want someone to take their shoes off when they get home.
I guess that I have the power. I'm an adult. If I want to do a pants off kitchen dance, I can do it.
Anytime you want.
Yeah.
Go right now.
But,
You can do it right now. Nobody will know.
Except
you wouldn't judge me.
I'll cover my eyes probably.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to Vine it, whatever.
It'll be distracting.
Hold on, guys.
Look at him go.
Oh, he's doing it. Oh, propeller, huh?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize you were commandoing it, Dan.
Was refreshing, guys.
But he does not succeed in cooking his own head. What's the story that's in that Poe trilogy that Fellini... Was it The Man Who Sold His Own Head or The Man Who Bet His Own Head? Bet Your Head to the Devil? Something like
Jesus,
that.
Jesus, I don't know.
The one with Terrence Stamp in it.
Oh, isn't that Toby, damn it? That's different. That's different.
I can't remember the name. There's an anthology Poe movie, and Fellini did one of them. I think it's... Yeah, I can't remember what it is. Something About Your Head and Betting or The Devil or something. Anyway, the...
Terrence Stamp. It was probably... Star Wars Episode One of Phantom Menace.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. Yes. So was it Turn Stamp? No, I can't. Now I'm not even sure. So he does not kill himself. Instead, his enemy says, "Hey, I made you some scrambled eggs. So you slept it off.
It was a real big night situation.
And you know what? Our rivalry is good because it pushes me to try harder because you're the better chef, but you're forcing me to challenge myself. So good on you." And Bradley Cooper goes back and... He learns a valuable lesson about family because his Sienna Miller chef makes him cook a cake for her bake a cake for her daughter's birthday because she has to work on her daughter's birthday, and they find out it wasn't actually the Michelin judges that night.
Oh, that's that great scene where they where he flirts with her daughter by licking frosting off his fingers.
Her a cake and she gives him a piece.
Daughter is, by the way, like eight, I would say maybe.
8 and a half. Another Fellini reference. Anyway, she's a little kid, and he's like, "Look." The thing is, Bradley Cooper. Oh, here's what I was going to say before. I'll say Bradley here. Bradley Cooper doesn't know how to play adorable. He just knows to play smoldering. So he's just got his heavy lidded blue eyes looking up at this little girl as he licks frosting off his fingers. It's disgusting. Like,
supposed to be playful. It does not.
No,
come off
it comes
like
off
that.
As like Humbert would be like, "You're grossing me out. This is disgusting."
I mean, inherently licking frosting off. I don't know if there's
the way he does it.
An adult looking at a child licking frosting off of the fingers. I don't know if there's a way of doing that that's not
creepy. But here's the thing about Bradley Cooper: he plays a man who is losing control in a rage filled way very well. Like, I don't know anything about his personal life, but he plays it like a guy who knows what it feels like to do that and is able to channel it for roles. And, like, I think he was so good in Silver Linings Playbook, partly because he seems to know what it feels like to not totally be in control of yourself and be able to relive that experience. And that's really good acting. I wish he had brought some of that to Aloha, which he didn't. And that was, like, one of the big weaknesses of that movie.
Yeah.
But he brings it
in the script.
Whereas here, the weakness is mainly just the script.
Yeah.
But he finds that it wasn't the real Michelin ones. It's already been established that Tony, who is the guy who
Tony,
who runs the hotel where the restaurant is. What?
It feels good. Tony.
That he has a crush on Bradley Cooper. He tells Bradley Cooper they weren't Michelin judges. They were software engineers from Birmingham. And Bradley Cooper's so happy he kisses Tony. Which is kind of cruel.
Cruelest thing you can do to someone
like,
who has a crush on you.
You're gay and you have a crush on me. I'm going to kiss you once. Just know it's never going to happen again.
Like, I'm throwing you a bone, buddy. Here you go. This is what
but,
you could have.
No, it's the opposite of throwing him a bone. He just, not the opposite, but it's like he just throws him a lips.
Yeah, that's right. He throws his lips at him.
Bradley Cooper falls in love with Sienna Miller's sous chef character. Or whatever she is, chef to whatever.
Yeah, Kelsa Paris, dude.
Just call her Sue Chef.
Over the terrible. I wish I had thought of it. Over the course of the next montage, he learns to be a better person. He starts working as a teammate with his chef guys, and then
chef guys.
his chef team, his chef's
five men. Chef guys.
Yeah, the real Michelin judges come in, and he says, "What do they do? What do we do?" And Bradley Cooper says, "We're just going to do what we do, like we do every day." And
so he's not chasing that star anymore, right, guys?
Yep, yeah, he realized, you know what this is about? Food is about people, because he's Hannibal the Cannibal.
Oh, okay.
And he's going to cook his own head and eat it himself. The ultimate decadence would be to eat your own head. But he realizes, you know what? It's okay to
mess with the head and you're fed.
It's okay to rely on people, and this is what family is all about. Hey, everybody, let's make ourselves a big meal in the kitchen because we're great chefs. We should eat some of it. The end. I don't think we find out if he gets the Michelin star.
No,
right?
We do. There's just like a wordless scene where
you just get the idea that something good happened.
Yeah.
But they could just as well be smiling because they had a good night working together.
Yeah.
A big night, if you will. Go watch Big Night instead of this movie.
Yeah, that's what he was telling him. He's like, hey, buddy, I watched Big Night last night. He's like, oh, I love that movie.
So you got a movie about a character who has a history of drug addiction and anger and rage problems, mm-hmm. and is trying to reestablish himself professionally.
And we meet that character after he has theoretically gotten over that stuff.
He's hit rock bottom and he's gone through his repentance and atonement, which I assume is this shucking of a million oysters.
Yeah.
And so now he should be well on the road to being a better person. He is not. And yet we don't see him when he's at his worst, and yet we don't see him struggle to become better. Everything just kind of happens.
Do you think if this was a heist movie instead of a chef movie, his weird overconfidence and like glibness would work?
I don't think so, because my problem with the movie isn't even his overconfidence and his glibness. It's that there are little to no obstacles in his path, and any that that arise, he overcomes almost instantly, sometimes by throwing a tantrum.
Yeah, the total lack of stakes bothered me. I wish they'd – he keeps mentioning
the team.
You never
cook steak.
Yeah, exactly. what's going to get burned if all you're doing is throwing shit in a fucking water bath? Part of the point is that this character has realized that his team are his family. But aside from Sienna Miller's character, we don't really see anybody else outside work, really.
No, there's a couple scenes where he picks people up to join the team, and we never see him interact with them in a meaningful way again unless he's yelling at them.
The only person who the story of this movie seems to really affect is him.
Yeah.
We don't know what would happen if they don't do well in the kitchen. Are people going to starve? Is the restaurant going to go out of business?
I mean, I'm glad that they didn't set up the stakes so high that everyone in the restaurant needed this, and there was 10 stories of woe or something. But yeah, it would have been.
Sounds like a Will Eisner comic.
The restaurant: 10 stories of woe, and everyone's Yiddish.
Yeah, that's a Jewish deli.
I don't know why I was thinking that it was 10 stories of woe, like an apartment with 10 stories.
Yeah, yeah, it's a super sad apartment building.
Yeah, all right.
But
stories from Wayside School.
That would be a Will Eisner thing.
Sad stories from Wayside School.
Sad wise stories.
This student killed themselves. Sad stories from Wayside School.
Well, is that one of the whole stories? Like on one page, that's all it says.
But there's never a moment when you worry about any of the characters, but especially not the hero. And if he was an asshole, but the movie made him pay for it, I would be okay with that. And yet, even the fact that he gets beaten up by drug dealers and almost doesn't get a Michelin star. It never felt like he was being punished for his sins or working to really improve himself.
I was surprised at how sympathetic the Tony character was. That character I cared about a little bit.
The two characters, honestly, that I felt an emotional connection to were Tony, who is reluctantly pulled back into Bradley Cooper's orbit and wishes he knew how to quit him.
Yeah.
And his rival,
Matthew Reese.
I can never remember Matthew Reese's first name.
Who you're sympathetic with because he had such a terrible goatee.
Because they had to ugly him up because he's such a charismatic actor with that gross mustache and stubble. But I feel like in the few scenes he's in, he sketched in a character of someone who has always been second place and could only become first when the other guy destroyed himself. That it was like, oh, this is a guy who is living with the disappointment of he's never going to be the best. He is the Dave Mustaine of these characters.
Thanks
that,
for putting in the words I understand.
Like, Megadeth is great, but they're never going to be as big as Metallica, and he could have been in Metallica mm-hmm. if he hadn't pissed everybody off and been so mean to, was it Hetfield's dog? Somebody's dog.
Yeah.
Or was it Dave Mustaine's dog who was attacking them?
The joke is that he was a mean drunk, and everybody else in the band was a fun drunk.
Yeah.
We should wrap things up. We should get on to final judgments.
Let's wrap it up in a pastry shell.
Good, bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie kind of liked. I'll start and say, like, I had a hard time with this episode. I don't know that there's like a lot of like funny shit to say about it.
Probably is terrible.
Well, no, I kind of like this movie, guys.
Hey, that's okay. You should have spoken up for it.
No,
I was slagging it.
I mean, look,
they came for Burnt and I said nothing because I was not burnt. Then they came for, what's another movie you like that you're ashamed of?
Probably some sex movie.
Then they came for The Great Bikini Off-Road Adventure. Yeah. And I said nothing because I was not The Great Bikini Off-Road Adventure. And then they came for me. And I'm not a movie. I'm Dan.
Wow.
Twist ending.
The twistiest.
He's been Dan the whole time.
No, I kind of liked it. I thought that all of the acting was good. I understand that the main character was totally unlikable. But for some reason, I still, like, it was...
I mean, no, I get what you're saying. This is not a bad movie, and it's not a good movie.
It went down kind of easy for me, and, like, I think that if you are someone who cooks a lot, which I do, it's...
Like, the knights or cooks a lot.
No, I just... like, the food looks good, and all of, like, the stuff surrounding the food, like...
I think it definitely hurt
appealing.
It hurt my liking of it that I am done with the overdone, if you will. With the idea of like a bad boy chef and burnt and watching a lot of like food porn scenes of food being cut up and cooked. Like, I don't like food enough that I still get a thrill out of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not enamored of the idea of like celebrity chefs or bad boy chefs. So like it had some marks against me right there.
A lot of that stuff I still like. So,
I mean, there's plenty of movies about jobs and worlds that I'm not interested in where I find the movie interesting, but this wasn't a terrible movie. This is like a 2-star movie, you know?
Yeah.
If you watch it with your mom on a rainy day, it's going to be fine.
And maybe if I had seen this movie before that Jon Favreau Chef, which I think handles that the exact same arc a little bit better, and it's a little bit...
It's more fun. It's funnier.
Yeah.
Jon Favreau is not a, like... essentially an Adonis who everybody is in awe of in every scene. So like that helps too.
He also had more, he had more scars on his hands. They put more makeup effect burns and scars on his arms.
And every time he tweets, it flies away.
Yep. And Bradley Cooper's character didn't have enough tattoos.
Almost very few people in the movie had tattoos, which is weird because chefs are covered in tattoos.
Yeah, that's how – it's like a hobo code. I would say
– Ray Bradbury's The Illustrated Man was about a chef.
I would say this is a bad, bad movie, but I can like – I could see if I had heard that this movie had been like – actually had been nominated for an award, I would kind of get it, but I didn't particularly care for it.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Bad, bad, kind of liked, and I don't know that it falls into our classification system.
Hello, Brent.
Travis.
Welcome to Trends Like These.
What's Trends Like These, you ask? Well, it's a podcast where we take the news trending on the internet and we cover it in podcast form.
We go beyond the headlines, beyond the memes to bring you the real story so that when your friends bring it up, you can look real smart.
We take things that need to be debunked and we debunk them. And then we take things that need to be rebunked and we rebunk them.
We bring you all the details and we give you a spin on it. Our opinions, our thoughts, and we also try to dig up some positive things to talk about. So it's not all bummers.
Just a couple of real life friends talking internet trends.
So join us every Thursday on MaximumFun.org and wherever podcasts are found.
We do have a couple of sponsors who helped keep the lights on around the old flop house.
Oh, Snoop Dogg, much like those horror movies, has sponsored this.
He says, No, he doesn't say anything. I was going to do something.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg doesn't say anything. He's a rapper, Dan. His mouth is his instrument.
You're right.
It's also where he puts his marijuana.
I'm ashamed. No, the Flop
and where
House,
he drinks out of a goblet.
The Flop House is supported in Sparta.
In Sparta, it was supported by...
supported in Sparta.
By that big hole that they throw all the Persians into.
They say, this is a shitty movie, and they throw them...
What, 300?
That's right.
That's a fun movie. This is usually about a movie where a guy hurls a spear into a rhinoceros's eye, and then it slides across the sand and just stops at his feet.
Zack Snyder is a visionary director, according to movie posters, Dan.
The Flophouse is supported in part by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a compelling website. From the strange to the downright bizarre, great stories define us. You should tell yours. With simple tools and templates, Squarespace helps you capture your story with a captivating website. You should start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/flop. You should Squarespace.
Now, Dan, I have a question about a website.
Now, Elliot, I want to interrupt you for a second because you always have one of these crazy website ideas.
No, not this time, my friend. This time it's a guaranteed moneymaker.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
Now, did you have anything you want to talk about? Or?
Yeah, what I want to talk about was this great idea you're
okay.
going to pitch me.
Now, it's called chimpshowers.com. Okay. Dan, has this ever happened to you? And I'm sure it has. If you're like me, you want a place where you can always reliably turn on a webcam with a chimp, where you can turn a shower on by the internet, and it will get the chimp wet. It's called chimpshowers.com. The chimps love it because they love getting clean. But here's the thing.
I have a terrible feeling that this is sexual in some way.
Nothing sexual about it, Dan. This is purely about using the power of the information superhighway to keep chimps clean and have a little bit of fun while you do it. Now, I've been having trouble putting the site together.
So who turns the water on?
It's connected to the internet. So you click on.
Okay.
And it pours on the chimp, and the chimp's smiling.
Oh, he's going crazy.
Yeah, he just takes a shower, and you can turn it on and off. They hate that. Turn it on and leave it on until they're done with the shower. Now, will Squarespace help me build that site?
It will. I mean, I think that some of the technical things, like, you know, being able to connect a website to a shower that turns on.
I have
on.
That technology. I just don't know how to put it on the internet.
Oh, yeah. If you just need the HTML coding, then Squarespace is the place for you.
Do I need to know coding?
You don't need to know coding.
I think the key would be if I'm going to want to see a chimp taking a shower and controlling the water flow, I'm going to want to be able to do that on the go. I'm going to want to be able to use that on my mobile device.
Thank you.
Well, you are in luck because Squarespace has responsive design that means that any website looks great on any device, a tablet, a phone, your laptop. If you're jacked into the Matrix.
So, yes, sure. Stuart.
VR goggles.
Say you're walking to work. You're like, I don't know how I'm going to get through today. Oh, wait, let me watch a chimp take a shower. Boom, on your phone. Now, there's also the spinoff site chimpgoldenshowers.com. We've rented out Uncle Scrooge's actual money van,
we've
turned it into a big shower for chimps to use.
Okay.
It's a little weird that chimps find it cold to be standing on all those cash coins, but I think they'll get used to it.
Like cold in a spiritual sense or in a physical sense?
Because they feel like life is not about material possessions and filthy lucre. Life is about, you know, keeping clean spiritually and also with your fur in a shower. And so Squarespace, where would I go to get like a discount on my first month or something?
I don't actually know that we have one of those. So, but we might if you go to squarespace.com/flop.
Well, for the free trial, that's good
possible
enough.
It's possible that there's a discount.
Okay, well, there's
a free... But you might have gotten a little too excited and said a thing that might actually not be true.
All right, well, forget that part. You can cut that out, right?
I could, but I'm probably too lazy.
Well, for a free trial, I can go to squarespace.com/flop, right?
You can.
Okay. Chimpshowers.com, it's the way of the future for bathing chimps, that's for sure. Let's say you got a chimp at home, you're at work, your chimp's dirty, you can't drive home to wash it.
No.
Hook it up to your home chimp shower, and that we don't know how to do that yet, but we're trying to set up the technology.
Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah, and as they always say, bathe that chimp, Squarespace.
We do have one more sponsor tonight.
Uh-huh. Chimpshowers.com. What the fuck?
You've been scooped.
Oh, man. This is just like Facebook all over again. Mine was a book of faces from my enemies.
It's called a yearbook.
Because I hated all the kids at school.
The Flophouse Tonight is supported in part by Casper, an online retailer of premium, obsessively engineered mattresses for a fraction of the price. Casper has a risk-free trial and return policy. You can try sleeping on a Casper mattress for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. Flophouse listeners can get $50 toward any mattress purchase. You can go to casper.com/flop and use promo code FLOP at checkout. Now, terms and conditions do apply, as they always will. But that's a great deal, because I, myself, sleep on a Casper mattress.
And how do you like it?
It is a delight.
You look well-rested.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
How much you bench?
I don't know, man.
Well, let's talk about the mattress then.
I probably could bench the mattress.
Okay, is it that light?
Yeah, it is
so
that light.
So, Dan, I hear the way you open it and it kind of folds out.
Yeah.
How did that work? Did it make cool noises like...
Did it bust open the windows of the car that you opened it in?
It comes in a big old
this
box.
This was what, a Fat Brothers movie?
Yeah.
Or Fat Boys? Not Fat Brothers, they were brothers. They were just boys.
Comes in a box that
Whoa, slow down, Poindexter.
Way too small to contain a mattress, and you take it out.
And it shows up, and you're like, this can't be my mattress. No, this must be an apology.
Apology for not having my mattress?
Yeah, it's out of stock. You got to wait on it. But luckily, it's never out of stock. It shows up.
And then when it expands, does it make a noise like...
Yeah, it goes...
You know it's working when you hear that. Wait, what? And so, Dan, how
would you... That's the seagull that's trapped inside your mattress.
Ah, production of the seagull.
Yeah, that's right.
Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Chekhov's. Jonathan Livingston Chekhov's the seagull. So what does it feel like?
It feels like...
To touch a woman.
Angels...
Wings. How does
and other things
and Archie seems
that could mean anything though. And does Archie like it too? Archie's a cat.
Archie seems
sleeps
to like
with
it.
Me on the bed, and he seems well rested because he's a little fucking scamp who causes a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's the thing about scamps; they're very well rested. Dennis the Menace never saw bags under his eyes. No. Heathcliff terrorized the neighborhood, but he always got 10 hours of sleep.
Yeah, the sleep of the just.
He's running around like a maniac, so he probably got some sleep. I don't have the energy that Archie has.
Well, he is a young cat, and you are an old man.
That's true.
Casper mattresses.
So Casper mattresses. The young, the old, right. The cat, the human, they all love it.
Use the promo code FLOP at checkout to get $50 toward your mattress purchase.
That's a good
huge.
Discount.
That's a great discount.
Yeah.
We have, before we move on, we have a couple of other messages.
We have some messages on the Jumbotron.
Jumbotron, kiss Dan. Jumbotron. Dan and Archie, kiss. Yeah. You probably kiss do kiss
cam.
Archie, but that's okay. He's your pet.
I kiss Archie all the time.
Yeah.
Not on the lips, though. He's got fishy breath.
He's got cat herpes.
Oh, no. Oh, I got that
herpes.
Now, too.
He's got herpes. Curb your enthusiasm.
So
Jumbotron.
This first Jumbotron message is from Love You Like Crazy Podcast. Now, Carrie and Jake are two friends who, every so often, give each other a call and talk about young adult fiction, then release the resulting freewheeling conversations as a podcast. The Flophouse is definitely an inspiration. In their first episode, they talked about Awoken, which is like Twilight, except instead of the male lead being a vampire, he's Cthulhu, a sort of squid monster, old god monster guy. So why don't you go down and subscribe to Love You Like Crazy Podcast? That's love, spelled like the word love. Ya, spelled like the divine ya-ya sisterhood.
Just one ya.
Like crazy, like the gods must be crazy. Podcast on iTunes or wherever, or listen to it on loveyoulikecrazy.com.
We've got another Jumbotron message. This one is more of the personal type.
Ooh.
Do we say who the message is for and who it's from?
Yeah, you should.
This message is for Devin Ruland. Ruland? It's spelled R-U-E-L-L-A-N-D.
Roland. Roland. The Dark Tower series.
This is serious, Dan.
All right,
I'm trying to do this man's name justice.
And he probably doesn't want you to talk about your own gunslinger fanfic that you've been writing, where Roland finds the what's the guy that he, the man in black, and they settle their problems through a game of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Wait, what? I wasn't
Yu-Gi-Oh! The collectible card game.
Wait, is that what happens in the Dark Tower series?
Dance version.
Now, if Devin is not a man and is a woman, I apologize.
Yeah.
I've both mispronounced the name and whatever. Anyway, Devin Roland, who is this message from? His lady love, Emily, says his right there. Turns out Devin's a man. Anyway.
I'm peeling the layers of this fucking onion.
I'm learning it step by step. Now, Emily says to Devin, although it is deeply flawed in many ways, I will concede that Interstellar is a rather fine film. Happy birthday, Dev. You make my life brighter every day. P.S. I thought this would be the best way to wish you a happy birthday since you were the one who introduced me to the Flophouse in the first dang place. That's very sweet. Thanks for using the Jumbotron, Emily. Devin, happy birthday. Interstellar, it sounds like you guys had an argument about it. So did me and my wife, who I love deeply. So yeah. I guess Interstellar is the movie that brings people together through
your wife,
arguments.
Christopher Nolan.
I'm genuinely curious who took which position on the Interstellar.
Oh, I liked it and she didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife and I were both kind of lukewarm on it. And then the next day we're like, oh, wow, we're still thinking about this, huh?
Mm-hmm. Stuck with
it's
you.
It's a way homer, you know?
Mm-hmm. In that it's out of the park. Sports but, joke.
Now is the time on the podcast where we read some letters from listeners. Listeners like you? Question mark? Could be. Did you send something in? Then you might be one of these people. But if not, probably not, because I don't have psychic powers. Anyway, that's my introduction to the concept of reading letters.
No song necessary.
So this first...
Elliot's truck dumb.
This first letter is from Jim, last name withheld.
I want Devin to write in and tell me how to pronounce his last name. I feel like I want to get that pronunciation right.
All right. I mean, sure. You can send in one of those wave files.
No, just spell it phonetically.
That's right. I guess that would be easier.
So if you're listening, Devin, call in with a wave file.
To 1-800-FLOP number.
We'll just be quiet and wait by the phone because I don't want to miss the call.
Mm-hmm, yep. We don't have answering machines.
So this is from Jen, last name withheld, who writes, Jen. My boyfriend says that Ask Prudence gets a ton of mail, so I'm asking you two. My parents have invited
me. Are you asking us if Ask Prudence gets a ton of mail? I assume
yeah,
it does. Hugely popular.
My parents have invited my agnostic boyfriend to church a couple of times, and he's declined each time. I'm a Christian, and I think he should not go because he's not interested in church, and I'm not interested in converting him. Unfortunately, my parents will probably...
very open-minded.
My parents will probably discourage our relationship if they find out he's agnostic. My boyfriend is willing to pretend he's Christian, but I don't think he should have to. I have doubts that he will be convincing. I can tell my parents the truth or continue making my excuses for why he can't make it, but this isn't going away. Tonight, my mom invited him to a nativity performance. What should I do, Flophouse? Also, my boyfriend loves the podcast and introduced
me to it.
It's
way too late.
I'm working my way through the archives, listening to you guys at work. We're both huge fans of the show and watched Castle Freak together. Thanks, guys. Jen, last name withheld.
I mean, if you still believe in a god after watching Castle Freak and that god's name isn't Jeffrey Combs, I don't know what's going on.
Now, be careful with going back through our back catalog because it gets a little seamy.
I like this. I have doubts that he'll be convincing. It's like, I like this Jesus of yours.
Good wine. Another, please.
Hit me again, barkeep.
Here's the thing. I'm going to say
good
a couple
book.
Things.
I thought it was a great book.
First, thanks for listening to the show and enjoying it. And thanks for writing in. As an agnostic, it means he's not sure, right? He doesn't know if there's a God. So shouldn't he expose himself to religion as a way of trying to kindle the fire and see if there's anything in faith there?
We're not
for
talking
him?
Richard Dawkins here. You're not dating Ricky Gervais. I feel like...
Name another guy named Rich or Ricky, who's an atheist.
Ricky Martin.
Not an atheist, Ricky Martin.
Ricky Ricardo?
Yeah.
Give it a... I'd say...
Ravishing Rick Rude?
Rick Rubin? Give it a shot and see... He should go once, see if it touches him at all, spiritually.
It might help him understand your faith better as well,
and why it's important in your life. If
yeah,
you
I don't think he needs
Christian.
To pretend he's Christian, but you know, he can go once or twice.
I think that's the concern, though, is that if her parents find out that he is agnostic, they might discourage the relationship, which would be too bad.
Which would be too bad, and at that point, you'd probably have a hard decision to make, and it's difficult.
But I guess if he's going as a way to like deepen their relationship and understand her faith better. If they don't understand that, you need to get one of those parental
divorces. You got an irreconcilable differences situation on your hands.
What if he
my man?
What if he goes and he pretends to be super Christian? Like he has
like
a big giant foam finger that says Jesus number
yeah,
one.
Yeah, he's a fucking shaker and he starts flipping out.
He starts making chairs and shit. He's carving furniture for him.
I think you're thinking of a Quaker.
Shakers make furniture too. There's nothing.
But if they're always shaking.
When you're totally abstinent, you got to find things to do. Now,
I'm just saying that he laps them. You know, he goes all in. He calls their bluff.
Calls their bluff?
That's right.
Says, I thought I believed in
you're Christian? I'm Christian.
I thought I had faith in the everlasting life promised by Christ, but
the
I didn't think
is,
that.
Dan,
I'm not up to his level.
That's going to backfire because her parents will see him being a crazy Christian. They'll be like, oh, wow, we have to be crazy Christians now.
Like, there's that sketch, Crazy Christians, that aired on Studio 60, and it made me feel so bad about everything.
Here's the other thing. Is he going to go to a live nativity? Yeah, there's going to be real animals on stage, right?
That's what it means, right?
I assume there's going to be like a camel and a donkey up there. Go
is there
going to
be
him.
A baby? I bet that baby won't act as good as I did.
Yeah, it's like,
no,
it's like
he's not going to be wearing a gold diaper. He's being born in a manger for crying
out loud.
There's
no Oberon.
It's a petting zoo that makes you feel good about humanity.
I don't know about good about humanity.
Well,
makes you interested in it.
Interested in it?
A petting zoo? Wait, so people go up on stage.
I wasn't sure about humanity before, but
now. Is it before or after the wise men come in and Jesus is born that people come up on stage and pet the animals?
I was thinking about after the service, you go up and pet the animals.
You're like, yeah, I love your performance.
And
you were very convincing.
Don't give the donkey time to relax and decompress after a show. No, go up and pet him.
Yeah, he's going to flip out.
He doesn't want to go to the bar with the rest of the cast. No, no, keep him on stage so everyone can touch him with their hands.
Can I take a picture with you, Mr. Donkey? He's like, no, I don't do that.
No pictures. Wait outside by the entrance. Maybe he'll sign your playbill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My handler will have to take that carrot because I'm a Scientologist.
I don't know what that means.
So I think the real thing is, what does it mean for your relationship?
Yeah. I hope we were helpful. We turned into a bim bam there for a second.
Into Bibendum, the Michelin man?
Oh, no. All three of us were one Bibendum?
That's right.
I guess I'll be a leg.
I call the head. Dan, you're the belly.
Aww. So this...
That's the star part.
Email is from...
More like snail mail with the way he's reading it.
This is from Miss First Name Withheld Rogers, who says...
Kenny.
I was listening to the Passion Play episode being discussed, and I had a revelation about a confusing celebrity encounter I had a few years back. Since you guys caused that revelation, I was excited to share it. I was at a bar late in the evening in my hometown. I was leaving the bathroom, and I accidentally ran into another patron. When I looked up to apologize, I was surprised to be looking at Bill Murray. I did the super cool response of, oh.
Bill Murray from Caddyshack?
And then I went back to my friends. I mentioned seeing them, and they said that there was a private party in one side of the room consisting of him, Mickey Rourke, and Megan Fox. This seemed like the weirdest grouping of people I could imagine having a get-together. I thought to myself, why were these people hanging out, and why were they hanging out in our small local bar? I assumed this would always be a mystery to me. When I heard in your podcast that they were all together in Passion Play, I thought that must be the reason they were together. The timing of my encounter matched to when the movie would have been filmed. Then a tiny bit more research showed that the movie was filmed partially in my town. The entire thing made sense after that. Thanks for helping me make sense of my life. Felicitations, Miss First Name Withheld Rogers.
I'm glad we could help solve that history mystery.
Yeah. We're a three real Encyclopedia Browns.
I mean, not that we solved the mystery ourselves.
It sounds like you got more joy out of Passion Play than I remember getting, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, no, I think by having encountered Bill Murray, she is the person who got the most out of Passion Play. Yeah.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be like to have no context for it and go into a bar and see that Bill Murray and Mickey Rourke and Megan Fox were all hanging out together.
I would have at the very least ordered like an appetizer platter and sent it over to him.
Some calamari, Bill Murray, Megan Fox.
And, yeah. They look like they're into appetizers.
I don't know if this is a bar that necessarily has calamari.
It's a bar food.
What kind of, doesn't deserve it up.
In Italy, maybe.
In Italy?
Yeah, let me go down to
Italy.
At Italy, definitely. At the seafood counter. Mm. Speaking of, Mario Batali of Italy fame, the executive chef consultant
for Burns. Oh, he was.
That's why Bradley Cooper was always wearing orange Crocs.
Yep.
He had orange crocodiles on his feet.
That would be a smooth move to send him over an app platter.
No, I thought to send him over some orange Crocs. Like, put these on. You're going to feel like $1 million.
You're going to feel like Mario Batali.
Here you go, Murray, Rourke, and Fox. Have a few mozzarella sticks.
What a weird law of us that would be Murray, Rourke, and Fox. Some mozzarella sticks on me. Get them some extra dipping sauce.
Yeah. Put a big tub of marinara on there.
Not just the little cup.
The little one.
Yeah. Mickey Rourke's fingers are weird, so it's trouble getting in there.
Bring him the 5-gallon bucket of marinara.
Yeah, give him a little syrup pitcher.
So this last letter of the evening is from Wyatt Notsenak, who writes, warning, contains spoilers for Friday the 13th, Part 3, a movie that came out over 30 years ago.
Okay.
Spoil away.
Dear Peaches, recently I have been very sick and thus stuck at home. There's nothing left to do except watch all 12 Friday the 13th movies in succession.
Like you do.
So that's what I'm doing. I'm sure all three of you know, the canon of the Jason universe is not exactly airtight, but a few things in particular stuck out to me.
It's one of those old antique cannons with a crack in it that explodes when you try to use it.
First of all, who is that zombie woman who jumps out and grabs the final girl off the boat at the end of Part 3? It can't be old Lady Voorhees because she got her head cut off. Second, how does Jason come back to life the first time after he drowns as a child? On the wiki, it says he, quote, somehow comes back to life. But in an extended universe comic book where Jason, Freddy, and Ash from Evil Dead meet, it is revealed that Mrs. Voorhees used the Necronomicon to resurrect him.
I was wondering
if you guys had any thoughts on this.
That's a goof 'em up.
Also,
I mean, it's speculation.
Also, we have Freddy versus Jason and Alien versus Predator. But will we ever see Freddy versus Ason?
It's an alien that got through Jason's chest and out his hockey mask.
Oh, no. It's an alien that took the form of Jason.
Will we ever see...
Ason.
will we ever...
How did you do on that test, Jason?
Ason. Ason Jason. That's what they call me because I get A's on every test. You are the least cool boy in school, Jason. Ason Jason.
Will we ever...
Let me snap the sunglass addition to my regular glasses. All right. Feeling cool. Jason, I'm not going to the prom with you.
Will we ever see Freddy versus Alien or Jason versus Predator?
Be interesting because the alien, I assume, has no dreams. So how is Freddy going to get to them?
Yeah, I feel like Freddy versus Predator would make more sense because the Yautja alien race, I'm assuming, has some kind of dreams.
Yeah, they seem
dreams of hunting.
Also, are you guys excited for the Friday the 13th video game? It's supposed to be like Evolve, except one player is Jason and the others are counselors. Sincerely, Wyatt Notsenak. Now, Stuart, I assume you have some feelings on various questions that have been asked. Let me remind you.
You're under oath.
Number one, who's the old lady zombie woman who jumps out and grabs the final girl off the boat at the end of Part 3?
I mean, I think that's supposed to be Jason's mom because Part 3 is fucking stupid. And it's like the worst one of the batch.
Okay.
Next, Takes Manhattan, which is probably the total worst.
What about In Space?
In Space is better than those.
So you you reject...
I guess you're right. Manhattan is pretty bad.
Yeah, Manhattan's not very good.
You reject the idea that it can't be old lady Voorhees because she got her head cut off.
I'm saying it is old lady... It's meant to be her. It shouldn't be, though.
If Jason can be both a little zombie kid and a huge hulking death demon, then she can be a headless woman and a headed woman.
Exactly.
All right, so how does Jason come back to life the first time after he drowns as a child?
For some reason, right?
Yeah, so he somehow comes back to life.
Yeah, somehow comes back to life. It's in there in the text.
Asked and answered.
Yeah, that's the problem with people just trying to comb through and create subtext. It's pretty clear.
Here's the thing about the Friday the 13th movies. They're not meant to be taken literally. They're metaphors for how we should live life.
How so?
By killing people with hockey masks on.
And talking about a video game, I wonder what the video game part
sure,
of playing
Mario Kart, great game. Yeah. I'm talking about a video game.
Mario Batali Kart, where it's full of baguettes and, I don't know, spaghettis.
And who's Mario Batali's evil brother?
Wario Batali? I don't think they're brothers, are they? I think they're just enemies.
I don't remember how they're related.
Luigi's their
brother. Luigi Batali is his brother, yeah. And there's Batali
Toads. He wears
Toads.
Green Crocs.
Green Crocs, yeah. He's a little taller. And Batali Toads.
And when he jumps, he floats around a little bit.
I'm trying to make a Battletoads joke.
Okay. You know,
oh, God.
I wanted to apologize.
You know what? This podcast is over.
I want to apologize for a previous episode where I said Gary Shandling was going to be cast as an elderly Battletoad in the Battletoads movie. Because
Gary Shandling has passed away.
I mean, he hadn't yet passed when you said that. It's totally okay. Everyone's going to die at some point. If you're going to take back every joke you've made about somebody after they die, it's just going to be every joke. Only make jokes about babies because they're going to outlive you.
So well, I hope in a perfect world that's correct.
Yeah.
So Gary Shandling, if I see
and then they got thick skins.
If I see you at the crossroads, Gary, I'm sorry. Somebody
and,
Dan,
if anything,
play.
I find that more offensive. Oh yeah, play Crossroads, Dan. Can you edit in Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony right there?
Sure. And
so you won't be
Mark.
Lonely.
Why do we have to die?
So you won't be lonely.
Okay. So we've had a lot of goof 'em ups tonight, guys.
We have had a lot of goof 'em ups.
Now, what's the next part of this podcast?
Good segue. The next part of this podcast is where we recommend movies that we actually kind of like, or even more than kind of like, that you should watch with your eye holes.
Put some eyes in those holes.
You know, I have not had a chance to watch much in the way of movies since the last time we were together recording.
Why don't you pick a movie you've watched at some point in the distant past? What's your favorite movie?
What's my favorite movie?
Mm-hmm.
If
you say Stop Making Sense, I will crush this beer can.
Did I?
We all know it's The Ruddles.
Have I ever recommended...
It's Chairman of the Board starring Carrot Top.
It's Cops and Robbersons.
Let's say that I'm going to recommend...
Was it Man of the House, the Chevy Chase, John Taylor Thomas blockbuster?
It's Mr. Wrong, the Bill Pullman, Ellen DeGeneres movie. It's
Getting Even with Dad, starring Macaulay Culkin and Ted Danson.
Did he ever get even with him?
He did. He did in the end, yeah. In some way, years of neglect, it's hard to get even with.
I'm sure I recommended this before, but...
it was Life with Mikey, starring Michael J. Fox.
In case I haven't, let me recommend then His Girl Friday, my favorite of the screwball comedies.
Interesting.
It's got Cary Grant, Rosalind Russell, based on the Ben Hecht play.
And Charles MacArthur play. Well, everyone forgets Charles MacArthur.
Yeah, well, because he didn't do as much as Ben Hecht.
Great. Doesn't mean he didn't write the play.
A lot of people like Bringing Up Baby. That's fine. You can like Bringing Up Baby.
No, you can't.
I'm not such a fan of Bringing Up Baby. And that's because in Bringing Up Baby, everyone is crazy.
Stop bringing up Baby.
And if there's a crazy...
But listeners couldn't see the eyebrow raise. Just one eyebrow went up when Stuart said baby, and that sold the bit. That put the stake through the vampire's heart, as far as I was concerned.
If you're living in a world where everybody's crazy, then nothing's crazy and then nothing's funny. You got to live in a world where there's rules and you press against those rules to make comedy. And the great thing about His Girl Friday is it has an airtight farcical plot that helps put over the screwball comedy. And I'm not going to say a lot more about it, but if you haven't seen it, it's a treat. So Cary Grant is super charming. Check it out. His Girl Friday.
Howard Hawks.
Howard Hawks, one of the greatest American directors of all time.
Real jerk, though.
Was he?
Apparently.
Well.
Can he sue us for libel?
Nope. Dead for almost 40 years at this point.
Famously, on His Girl Friday, he timed the dialogue with a stopwatch and had people overlap their dialogue, which was not a thing that was done at the time. So that's an innovation you can trace back to that, huh? That's something.
Sure, yeah. If that won't get someone to watch it, I don't know what will.
So I'm running out of steam, guys. I think you can see it in my eyes.
So speaking of overlapping
dialogue. Timed with a stopwatch, raves Dan McCoy of the Flophouse. That's an innovation, right?
That's something. Come on.
Come on.
I'm giving you all I got here.
Go see His Girl Friday. Dan McCoy says, that's something, right? I'm running out of steam, says Dan McCoy.
So I finally got around to watching a Western from 1971 that I'd never seen before called McCabe and Mrs. Miller, directed by a fellow named Robert Altman, which means old man in German.
Alternate man.
Oh, I never thought about that. So this Altman fellow.
Sounds like a low-budget science fiction movie from Full Moon Entertainment, Robert the Alternate Man.
He slapped together low-budget Full Moon Entertainment. What are you talking about? So he put together this little Western based on a novel named McCabe. And this is it's a story of a gambler type with a mysterious past who ends up forming an alliance with a woman of ill repute as they kind
of madam.
A madam, yeah. They played by played by Warren Beatty and Julie Christie.
Play the madam? They like one of them is the front, one's the back, or yep. she's on his shoulders in a trench coat.
Mm-hmm. And they set up their various enterprises in a burgeoning town in the West. And while their enterprise kind of, starts to flourish, the town around them flourishes, and his past, kind of comes to the fore when a rival enterprise kind of moves in. You guys have seen this movie. It's great, right?
It's a great movie.
I've never seen it before. Can you fill in anything that I totally missed?
Robert Altman is another one of the greatest American directors.
It's a great example of the sound in it is a little muddy.
Overlapping dialogue there too.
Yes, but not the sound is a little muddy and the image is a little muddy because it was not processed properly when the film was literally made.
I thought that was a choice by them.
It was not completely a choice, but it works for the movie. And the score is by Leonard Cohen. There's a bunch of songs by him in it that are really good.
Yeah.
And the acting's great, the story's great, the characters are really rich, and it's one of the few Altman films that finds a really tight structure by the end of it. And the ending I find so affecting and so beautiful.
And it's a movie that, having read up on the movie since watching it, it's referred to as an anti-Western, and I think that kind of fits in that it takes the traditional idea of that like smaller conflict of the like gunfighter up against, rival gunfighters. And it kind of makes the story of the hero less important than the story of the town as a whole.
It starts out as a story of a con man trying to get ahead any way he can. And it ends up being the story of a community being born. And it's a really beautiful movie. It's really good. And it's got a ton of Robert Altman's stable cast, Shelley Duvall and
Odo from Deep Space Nine.
Rene Auberjonois. Yeah, and Keith Carradine
in Keith Carradine's first role.
Yeah. And it's just a really good top five Westerns.
And Warren Beatty's character McCabe is such a great, such an awesome Western hero that I don't know if I've seen that character be the lead in a Western before. a character who seems very confident until he's kind of alone and kind of out of his element, and he's kind of revealed to be kind of a man of indecision.
Yeah. It's a really good movie, McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Elliot?
I'll recommend a movie too. Hey!
What a surprise.
A movie I recently saw that I had been putting off seeing for a long time, but I liked a lot when I saw it, is The Tin Drum, the German movie.
Die Blechtrommel?
Mm-hmm, Die Blechtrommel, directed by Volker Schlondorf. And it's, for people who aren't, I've never read the book, but I'd like to, and I know Stuart's
it's
a fan
great,
of it.
Yeah.
It's the story of a boy who at age three.
Volker Schlondorf.
That's his name.
The most German name.
If it was, unless it was like Gustav Heinholz. Like, but the Fritz Krautdeutscher. But it's about a boy who is born around the time of the first. No, and actually, what time? Like after the First World War, but before the Second World War. He's born in like the early 20s. And at age three, he makes the decision that he is not going to grow anymore because adults are dumb and mm-hmm. the world of adults is crazy and irrational. And instead, he will stay a three-year-old and communicate mainly by banging a tin drum and screaming so high-pitched and loud that glass shatters. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the next 15 years or so. The film follows, the book I guess goes longer, but follows his life as everything is turned upside down, both by his choice to remain a small child and also by the horrible events going on in the world and in Germany as the Nazis come to power. And it's one of these movies that was shot in Europe in like the 70s, 80s period, late 70s, early 80s, that looks really good. Like the colors are really good. There's a lot of great visuals and shots in it. There's some very strange scenes because he becomes interested and attracted to a female love interest, even though he's still in the body of a kid.
He's a little boy.
And I know that scene got it briefly banned on video in Oklahoma, I think it was, for a few months or a couple years. But it's okay to watch it now. But it's just a
well, and it's
it's a really
it's only weird in context.
It's only weird out of context.
Oh, I guess you're right.
If you see the scene in context, it makes perfect sense. But seen out of context, you're like, why is that kid doing that? But it's a surprisingly funny movie in a lot of places, but overall sad movie. But it's that that European kind of grim humor. And I thought it was really good.
And with like a definitely a touch of magical realism.
Very much so, yeah. There's a
which is, as we've talked about on the show, is very difficult to capture in a film. And I think The Tin Drum kind of does it.
Yeah, they managed to pull it off very nicely in the way that a movie like
Winter's Tale that we talked about.
Winter's Tale was the one that came to mind. But that's more of an out-and-out fantasy. But like, there's a lot of movies that try for it and don't quite pull it off. I know that like Almodovar is someone who goes for it, and I feel like he pulls it off some of the time, but not all the time.
Yeah.
But so The Tin Drum, but of all these movies, go see McCabe and Mrs. Miller. Stuart's got the strongest recommendation. Then His Girl Friday.
Like usual.
For a laugh.
Wait, hold on.
And then Tin Drum number three.
All right. I mean, I could argue that, but that's fine.
I'm just saying personal choice. Yeah. But that's only partly because I've seen His Girl Friday probably 15 times at this point.
Yeah. So
now what do we do, Dane?
Is this the part where we talk about the movie we saw tonight? It's called Burnt.
And boy, was it.
Whole howdy. Everybody order some Chinese and put some coffee on. It's going to be a long night.
No, this is the part of the podcast where we say, hey, we're going to stop this podcast. It's not going to be in your ears in a few seconds or more than a few seconds, but you get the idea.
You can drag it over to the little garbage icon.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan, what are some
ideas? Slip it right in there.
What are some ideas
just
for
it? Slip it right in there.
I don't like where it's going. So what could people do after they finish listening to the podcast? So we're going to end the podcast in about a minute, 30 seconds
or so. Go over to flophousepodcast.com and leave a review on Yelp or something.
Maybe they should leave a review on iTunes. We're so close to 1,000 reviews on iTunes. Mm-hmm. I just want it to happen.
Star, super shitty podcast.
No.
Done.
Give us
Hit
eight
send.
Michelin stars.
Wow.
Then we can stop being boozy, badass, bad boys.
I'll never stop being a boozy bad boy.
And then maybe when they're done with the podcast and they leave that review, they can just go on with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, experience the perpetual pageant that is reality.
Just get out there, man.
The wondrous surprises that are in store for
you. Just get out there.
You can't live your life through your ears.
That's for sure in many ways. Just try stuffing a pizza in that thing. It's not going to get to your tummy.
Yeah, so, you know.
Just, like, go out there and live.
Just live life, man.
Just find the next person you see and say, like, hey, I want to relate to you from one human being to another.
Yeah.
They're going to want to leave.
I want to give you a kiss if you're into it, and they won't be.
But you'll have given them the option, and that's okay.
The important thing is consent.
By offering it, you'll only be marginally creating an atmosphere of fear and tension.
Guys, just go out there and live.
Yeah.
Just live,
just
you know?
Just be
like Jim Carrey in Yes Man and just say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but don't be like Jim Carrey in Yes Man. Be better than that.
I thought that was Liar Liar.
No, that's where he couldn't lie.
Oh, but why is it called Liar Liar?
It's ironic.
Oh.
The same reason Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, all their minds were full of spots, and it was nighttime.
But most importantly, for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
Well, I've been Stuart Wellington, partner.
And awed by Stuart's John Wayne impression, I'm Ellie Kalen.
Good night, everyone. Just nonstop play.
That's Elliot's ad for the sex website that we're out of fucking say.
Archie is now literally throwing himself against the door to try to get out.
I mean, you can let him out as long as he doesn't jump on my lap and claw at my legs.
He makes no promises.
I don't know why he does that. Is my penis made out of mice, Dan? Why does this cat want
to
be in my lap so badly?
Open up.
Take a look.
Oh, wow. That's a very mouse-generated penis.
Your penis is squeak, right? Like mine? Squeak, squeak, squeak. And you feed it cheese?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist-owned.
Listener-supported.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Hal, and we're the hosts of We Got This,
the show that offers definitive answers to dumb debates that you suggest.
Every Wednesday, we discuss the hot-button topics you never knew you cared so much about, like whether you should put ketchup on a hot dog.
What's the best Star Wars movie?
Whether it's better to be too hot or too cold.
Coke or Pepsi?
Best Marvel movie.
Which is the best religion?
I told you we're not doing that one.
So join us every week on MaximumFun.org, and don't worry, everyone. We got this.
We got this.